Session number 913.
General Younger, Reel 1, could you start off by telling me a little about your personal background and the circumstances which led up to your joining the Army?
Well, I went to school, private school in Hastings, then a charter house, and then on to Cambridge University, Trinity College. And the idea was, my father was then chairman of McKeown's Brewery, and William McKeown Co., now part of Scottish in Newcastle. And the idea was that I should go into the brewery. Well, halfway through Cambridge, having failed in an exam, I just discovered I didn't want to go into the brewery anymore, and that I'd rather be a soldier. And so I did my last 2 years at Cambridge. I did what was called military studies, military history, and so on and so forth. And of course, joined the cadet corps, it was called, I think, called then. And I joined, did an attachment to the 7th Hussars, a regiment in Edinburgh, then, for 6 weeks. That was mandatory, so they could have a look at me. And I joined the army a year later.
Was there any specific incident at Cambridge which moved you away from the brewery industry and towards the army?
I think partly failing in this exam, and which was rather shocked me, really.
Yes.
And also, I'd always been interested in reading military history and so on. We know close relation, a few cousins who'd been in the First War, no close relation, been regular soldiers. My mother's father had been a sailor, became, I think, a rear admiral. So I'd always interested in the services. But I didn't decide until beginning of my second year at Cambridge.
I see. So it wasn't a long-held ambition by any means?
No.
Yes. Why did you choose the cavalry?
Because I liked horses and riding. And also because I had known, I knew the 7th Hussars, so them having been admiral, they used to come down here and hunt, and one used to meet them, some of the younger people socially. But I joined purely, really, because I liked horses and all connected with horses. They've been connected with horses.
Was your interest in horses stronger than your interest in soldiering, would you say?
In those days, yes.
Yes. But if it was an interest in horses, were there no other ways open to you to satisfy that interest without taking the rather drastic step of committing yourself to a career in the cavalry?
Yes, it wouldn't have been most of one's life, though, if this had gone the cavalry, I think.
You mean you could make, in the cavalry, you could have horses 100% of the time instead of...
Yes, I did have some other interests, but I was also, for some odd reason, interested in politics, because my father's brother at that time was chairman of the Conservative Party.
I see. I always assumed that Scots with an interest in the cavalry would automatically join the Greys.
Well, there wasn't a vacancy for me in the Greys. I didn't try very hard because I knew there wasn't one.
Yes.
There was somebody who had a closer, who had a family connection with the Greys, who was like to, but we're bound to get a vacancy.
Did you ever consider any alternative arm of the service than the cavalry?
No.
And when you joined in 1926, was there at all, did you think about how relevant the cavalry was likely to be in future military affairs?
Not immediately, I don't think. You'll remember Allenby's campaign in Palestine. That was a great...
Brilliant.
...cavalry success, and I think the cavalry was still rather basking in the glory of that. And a good deal of the training, I think, was probably... training for that kind of event, pursuits and so forth.
I'd be interested to learn in a little detail about the pattern of cavalry life and cavalry training at the time you join, before we go on to talking about mechanization. You went to Tidworth first of all.
Yes.
What were your experiences at Tidworth?
Well, the The training cycle in the cavalry always was very much affected by this necessity of sending drafts of trained men every year to regiments in either Egypt or India. And so what it meant really was that you were very short of men in the winter, very short of men indeed, and all exercising and grooming of horses was really all. There wasn't much training done for that reason. And you were training recruits, of course, in the riding school and to shoot and that sort of thing, but you weren't able to get troops and then in squadrons probably till the spring. And the cycle of training went on, leading to regimental training perhaps in August, and probably maneuvers, but not every year because of the shortage of money, in September. And then off went your trained men, having had leave, to either Egypt or India. And that happened every year, really, until one went abroad.
Now, that's the thing in a sort of overview. Yeah. I wonder if we could look under a little. You were at Tidworth, having just joined the cavalry, with hopes and expectations that it would provide the kind of horsey life that interested you. How well did it satisfy you?
Well, one was put in the riding school straight away. Well, I could ride. I mean, I wasn't a very experienced rider. I was an adequate rider, I suppose. You know, I was never a really high-class one. And one was also put on the square to smarten you up with the recruits, and the riding school with recruits. And that was for several months that went on, until you passed off, just like any other recruit did.
Yes.
And you did duties like orderly officer and so forth as well.
So there was
the first year.
There was this preliminary period of basic training then.
What? Sorry?
There was this period of
preliminary
basic training.
One was given a troop at once, but you were, of course, with an experienced sergeant who showed you the way around.
Yes. In that preliminary training phase, what aspects of it did you enjoy most and what least?
I don't think I'd probably care for a square for the drill very much. I liked a riding school, and I don't think there was any tactical training to speak of then. I think that waited until you pass out of the riding school.
Was the riding school an experience of a different quality of riding than you had experienced in civilian life?
Oh, yes. The only teaching I ever had was either from my father or from an old groom. Riding, and this was a proper, you were taught by a trained instructor, probably a non-commissioned officer. You were in a ride with other recruits, and her riding was always supervised by an officer who'd, apart from commanding officer, of course, but by an officer who'd been at Whedon, been trained as an instructor at Cavalry School of Whedon. It was previously at Netheravon.
Can you give me any specific examples of the kind of riding exercises which would have been perhaps most different from your prior experience of horse
riding? Well, you did a good deal of riding without stirrups, of course, to get your strongest seat, and jumping both indoors and out of doors. You were taught to clean tack, of course, how that should be cleaned from Saturday, and to inspect it. That was all part of the preliminary course too. And the regimental veterinary officer came into it to, you were taught about minor ailments that happened to horses, that you might deal with as a troop officer without necessarily calling on the skilled people, the veterinary officer, or the farriers, the regimental farriers who did the shoeing. They also knew a certain amount about minor ailments. They went up to the rank of staff sergeant, and one tried to put in to learn their job. There was no, I don't remember being taught any signalling, there was no wireless thing.
Yes.
I think the communication was mainly by runner.
Mm-hmm. Once you'd been through this preliminary training stage, how then did the routine develop for you as a troop commander at Tidworth?
Well, after 2 years, I was lucky. I went to the Cavalry School at Whedon, so probably before I'd really learnt my job as a troop leader. That was simply because somebody else got ill and we had a regimental vacancy, and I was lucky enough to get it. And that was purely riding, equitation and instructing.
How did the equitation school experience differ from the riding instruction you received with the regiment?
Well, it was a good deal more concentrated, I think.
Could you elaborate on that? Tell me the kind of things that were going on. I'm very ignorant about...
Well, you did a good deal of indoor riding to get, if there's anything wrong with your seat, to try and improve it. And practice on different sort of horses, sticky horses, and meant horses had to be kicked along, and keen, excitable horses that you had to ride quietly. Every sort of different type of horse you were allowed to ride, or are made to ride. A lot of outside jumping. It was a biggish area. And again, more advanced veterinary side. there wasn't much tactical training. There was a little, but not very much. That increased later on, I think, at that school. But it did make one a considerably better rider and a considerably better instructor. And that was the object of it, to, when you finished there, to be able to run the riding school in the regiment, which in fact didn't come my way, but it might have done.
I've always had the impression that cavalry regiments had a high sense of sport and a high sense of fun, and I wondered whether at the equitation school there was a sort of opportunities that were taken to test relatively young officers like yourself. Were there any sort of pranks that went on?
Well, you've got a good deal of hunting there. It was in the Midlands, you see. You've got 2 or 3 days a week hunting. You did some early morning work, you know, first when just got to the meet in time, and Saturday was always a day off, and I think there were 2 other days in which you, if you had a horse, and you were allowed to hunt, there were trained horses. You had 3 horses, a trained horse, a half-trained horse, which had to bring up the standards of trained horse in the year, and a remount, which you had to start straight out of a field. It was winter. You always went in July, and finished in, I think, the following May or June. May. And so you really had almost a whole year there, in a full cycle.
How did the social life at Whedon compare with the social life of the regiment?
Oh, it was very different, I think, because, well, it was a part of the world where people were very hospitable and kind, and neighbours, I think, up to 20 miles or so away. I made a lot of friends in that course, which I still got in that neighbourhood in Northamptonshire, and Northamptonshire and Leicestershire. And, of course, you also made friends in different regiments. That was another thing about it. I've again got several friends still now who I first met on that course.
You mean families that lived in the area of Whedon would invite young officers to tea and to
very
dances and parties?
Yes, very much so.
After the year at Whedon, did you return to Didworth?
No, the regiment moved to Colchester over there while I was in Whedon. And we were 2 years at Colchester and then went to Aldershot.
See, Colchester was a single station?
It was a single station, yes.
Yes.
Not a very good station.
No. What were the advantages and disadvantages of life in single stations and brigade stations?
Well, as regards, you did more training in a brigade, of course, but in a single station you tended to train, you train with other cavalry regiments. You would probably squadrons of guys for infantry brigade and that sort of thing, but it wasn't a very, it didn't do very advanced training. We had manoeuvres 1 year, I think, which wasn't a good country for cavalry, Essex, I don't think, Essex and Suffolk. As regards a brigade, well, you had a competition, if you were always, what should we say, trying to improve on it. Bounce isn't the right word, but trying to be better at something than somebody else the other regiments was, or get up to their standard if they were very good.
Which did you personally enjoy best, single or brigade stations?
Sorry?
Which did you personally prefer?
I preferred brigade station.
Why?
I like both Tidworth and Aldershot. Well, I think there were more, or other regiments there to get to know, and you did, you had more fun and you had more work, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you went to Colchester, you continued with with the routine troop, squadron, and regimental
training?
Exactly
the same routine because of this drafting system. Of sending your trained men abroad. You couldn't have any other route. Mm. Your year had to be the same. Because the drafts always went abroad in the winter.
We'll go on to Egypt and India later on, but I wonder if I could ask you just now whether, as a young cavalry officer, you preferred life in England with the regiment or life in foreign stations.
Oh, I think I preferred it in England. I was very keen on hunting in those days.
Where?
In England. I preferred in England, or Scotland for that matter, in Great Britain, because I was very keen on hunting in those days, and there was no equipment. I was never a good polo player, and I'm never a good games player. I'm a really good games player, and you had to have a good eye to be a good polo player, I think. And so I therefore preferred service in England, I think. But I enjoyed Egypt all the same.
Yes.
India, I never served in peacetime.
Not much scope for hunting in Egypt.
No, there wasn't. Mm-hmm. The polo, of course.
Yes. Now, we've talked quite a bit about various aspects of cavalry training before 1935, when you were mechanized. During that period, up to 1935, as regards your regiment's military functions, what did you as a young officer feel you were actually being trained for what kind of roles?
Well, certainly reconnaissance, because there was an armoured car hardly existed then. And defence, yes, covering withdrawals. I don't think with modern weapons anybody seriously thought that attack was a possibility. Successful attack was a possibility. Well, once the machine gun became... there were more and more machine guns in the army. And...
Which of these roles of reconnaissance and covering defensive positions was given the most attention in your training and the kind of exercises and maneuvers you did?
I think reconnaissance was.
Yes.
Advance guard and reconnaissance.
Yes. Were there any major maneuvers you took part in doing schemes?
There were some fairly major ones for me. It was Aldershot. I was on Salisbury Plain, the major cavalry maneuvers in those days, because less damage was done, and you could get about better. I would think, and I said, there wasn't a financial crisis in 1931. I think maneuvers were missed for a year after that. I think about 1933, either 1933 or 1934 from Hindsay, we went on maneuvers on Salisbury Plain.
Did you find those occasions a memorable experience?
Well, they were all fun, yes.
In what way?
Oh, yes, I think so. Interesting and fun.
Can you explain why they were interesting and in what ways they were fun? Can I press you for a little
bit? Well, I think it's always fun trying to put your wits against somebody else's. And they were interesting, well, because it was one's job.
Yes. Can you give me an example of the kinds of things you did during those exercises that you found particularly interesting? Any particular incidents which stand out in your mind?
I didn't find that very easy, but it was really to find out. I suppose what one found most interesting was attempting to find out much of what was useful without getting into too much trouble. You know, you went bald-headed when you were doing shot, and that was that. So trying to be realistic about it and use of cover particularly, and moving, controlled movement, not just wild movement, controlled movement, which is very important. That's going along if you bump into something, but moving from feature to feature.
Did any of these exercises, these large exercises, involve you competitively against units from the tank corps?
No, I don't think so.
So you didn't have a chance to pitch yourself against...
Well, we wouldn't have had much chance, would we? I didn't think so then. I mean, I've never had much more firepower, didn't I?
Yes. I was talking to Colonel McCorkadale about the same thing, and he said, well, the thing about the tanks was that over a short distance, we were actually more mobile than they were, and also you could always hear the damn things coming, so he felt that, you know, there were some ways...
Well, that is quite true. You could see them and hear them, too. That is absolutely true. And, of course, I think they were very restricted as to where they could go, because, except on places like Salisbury Plain, because of the damage they did, which was no fault of theirs. Even then, attacks are fairly heavy vehicles.
Yes.
And but you could go across country, and as long as you kept off places to be sown or anything of that sort, you were allowed to.
Yes.
So you could move tactically much, I should think, more than it was possible for the tank. Royal Tank Regiment to do because of the damage question.
But you had no direct personal experience of exercises either combined with or against tank units?
I remember them on the Salisbury Plain, but I don't remember being involved in any exercise with them.
Yes.
This was the early 1930s. I think it was all still very elementary, I think. And I think they started... If I remember my history right, it started at Tidworth, a sort of mobile force. It never got very far. I think there was difference of opinion as to who should command it and who should be responsible for training officers and so on. That all delayed things. That, again, is a long time ago. Mm.
Did you meet any tank corps officers on a social level?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. How did you get on with them?
Not very many, but some, yes, certainly.
Yes. I've always... been interested in, but have had great difficulty in tying down certain of the indications that one gets in just reading the history books of the period, the regimental histories and various other kinds of sources, that there was this terribly fierce competition between the tank corps and the cavalry regiments before the mechanization phase, and a certain amount of professional not hostility, that's not the right word, but very much sort of a bit on edge with each other, sort of seeing each other as competitors.
Well, I think that's probably true, yes. It is. It's difficult to say how, or I suppose what was behind it all really was, there must have been fear in some people's heads, that it would be the end of the cavalry as such, as mounted, and... people weren't looking forward to that very much.
Yes.
And I think quite in between the wars, I think quite a lot of young men in my sort of opinion, didn't really think very, very far ahead. I took the view about 1934-35 that it was bound to be a major war, and one would have to try to be a bit more professional.
So there was a slight sense of feeling a bit threatened by the...
Oh, yes. I think so.
Yes. The 11th and the 11th Hussars and the 12th Lancers were mechanized in 1928, a couple of years after
yes.
you joined. Did this event cause much reaction within your regiment?
Well, I think we were always very friendly with the 11th as a regiment. I think we used to draft to each other. We did know them very well, the 11th. And I think, the armoured car row, after all, was a reconnaissance row and wasn't all that different to a cavalry row. Reconnaissance and protection. I don't think one was unduly alarmed. Is that what you were trying to ask? I wasn't at that age. After all, I was only 24 then.
I wondered if there was any sense of perhaps the writing being on the wall a bit.
Well, there should have been.
But you
I think there should have been. I don't think there was in my age group. There should have been, certainly.
Did this fairly close contact which you had with the 11th Hussars give you any... give you personally...
I don't think we were ever in the same station as them, but... For some reason, our officers have always been very friendly. I don't know why, but they were. Yes.
I wonder whether through those social channels, perhaps, you got any insight into how well the 11th took to mechanisation, what their experience was.
They did
was
take
like.
It extremely well, and so did the 12th. They were two very good regiments. Mm. I mean, you must know enough about the army to know that they're good regiments and not so good regiments. And they've always been outstandingly good regiments, both of them. Mm. And a good regiment always takes those things in its stride and must. Otherwise, it's not a good regiment.
Yes, quite. When mechanisation became a livelier issue in the early 1930s, were there within the 7th Hussars any variations in the reactions to the prospect of mechanisation?
Oh, yes, I think so. There were reactionary people who said they'd... said, well, if it comes to us, we'll leave. Well, they didn't leave, in fact, but they said so. And there were others who thought it was bound to happen sometime. I think it was bound to happen. And there was probably middle school who may not have thought a great deal one way or the other about it. I think that's fair.
Which category would you have placed yourself in?
Well, I certainly wasn't in a reactionary one. I think I was pretty sure it was going to come sooner or later.
Yes. Did this difference of attitude, was it located in primarily the reactionary ones? Were they primarily the senior ones and the progressive, the junior, or wasn't it as neat
I
as
should
that?
Think the reactionaries were probably the very horsey junior ones.
Really?
I should think. Well, the ones who were very horsey, whose real life was hunting in polo, and I would have thought. One or two older ones, too, were very reactionary. But they were probably who weren't going to get beyond major, anyhow. I never heard of a reactionary commanding officer.
What about the majority who weren't reactionaries? How would you define their attitude to mechanization? With what kind of feelings did they view it and receive it?
Well, they didn't look forward to it, I don't think, the reactionary ones. Because it was something that we never had much to do with. I mean, in those days, you probably didn't know how your motor car worked. The young cavalry officer didn't. I don't know if they do now. I think they do now. They've got it now, obviously. But they didn't in those days. And I think it was all so much bound up with the horse, a different type of movement. Probably made them prefer to do everything on a horse rather than in a vehicle. I suppose that was it.
Yes. But for this majority, would you categorise, not the reactionary ones, the majority, would you categorise their feelings as, I mean, there are many extremes, there are many possible reactions. They could have welcomed it, they could have been hostile but accepting, they could have been resigned. Mm. What would you say was sort of prevalent mood of the majority?
I think accept with slight regret.
Yes.
My regiment was not mechanized in 1936 when we were in Egypt, and the joys of England and fox hunting were rather far away, and it must be fairly obvious to everybody that mounted cavalry could not operate in the desert.
Hmm. How did the senior NCOs, the junior NCOs and the other ranks take to the prospect?
According to the regimental history, which I wasn't present when it happened, I was on leave when it was announced that I think they had a poll throughout the regiment. It was well, under 10% of the other ranks who regretted it.
Mm. Were those 10% concentrated in any particular group?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I wondered whether the older senior NCOs might have perhaps...
I don't remember that. And, of course, some of the surprising people who I wouldn't have thought were particularly adept or particularly well-do did, like the Farriers, for instance.
Yes.
Blackfish. regimental blacksmiths. They were a particular success.